This is Paul Daner Jr. and Mo Egger in studio talking all things Bengals and general NFL topics on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
Hey, what's up? Good afternoon. I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you're having an awesome Tuesday afternoon. We have a little of everything. We are going to do something in the 4 o'clock hour that I'm only going to do one time between now and at least late November. That is coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Plus, the Reds are in a playoff chase. If the playoffs started today, the Reds would be in them. Do you feel Reds playoff fever gripping the tri-state? Yeah, me either. David Bell's pregame comments. Luke Fickell at 420 as well. A lot to touch on between now and 6, but it's Tuesday. That means our guy, Paul Daner Jr. from The Athletic, is here covering the Bengals for TheAthletic.com. He's written a couple of pieces in the aftermath of the season-opening win over the Minnesota Vikings. He's done at least one podcast that I've listened to. Another one that I was a part of forthcoming. Paul Daner Jr. is here.
Been a busy day.
Been a busy day for you.
It has been. Yes. Tuesdays are like bring the throat lozenges.
This is it.
Yeah.
You got a lot going on.
Tuesday's talking is talking day.
Very good. Well, I'm glad you're here to talk because there is a lot to talk about.
There is.
I mean, like a ton. And I'll start with who you wrote about. Joe Burrow was not an afterthought from that game for me. But on the list of things that I was sort of going through mentally on Sunday afternoon, and then as I'm sort of jotting down that I wanted to talk about yesterday, Joe Burrow was not the first name that I wrote down. And that is remarkable, given the fact that he was the story all offseason. He did make his reappearance. He did play very well. He did make a critical play late in the game, which led them to victory. And I guess for me, the thing that stands out as I sort of remove myself from 4 o'clock or so on Sunday is how sort of routine the whole thing felt with him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Burrow delivered the kind of moment on Sunday that we were salivating over well before they drafted him. And when he did it, it's like, yep, I'm going to see a lot of that from number 9. And it felt routine in a weird way.
There's nothing this guy does at this point that surprises me. I mean, and I mean that in the most glowing way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I mean, think about what we saw. I mean, think about what he was coming back from.
Mm-hmm.
And how long it had been and how serious that was. And the fact that he was even playing that game was you know, a testament in a long, you know, considering what he had come back from. Then think about the fact that we were supposed to be about how long into the season are we going to deal with him mentally getting used to, you know, the pocket presence thing. Well, look at go back and look at his first touchdown pass to T. Higgins. He has to hold it an extra 2 ticks to wait for Higgins to come into the clear and knows he has to take one right on the chin in order to do it. And he stands in and throws the touchdown ball. And then you see him hobbling off the field. He's limping and holding his shoulder and goes over to the bike and just like gets on the bike and wills himself through injury. This is his first game back.
Yes.
We've already got like fighting through injury guy who goes out there and continues to play. And then in the biggest moment of the game on 4th and an eyelash, he drops back and throws it 26 yards in the air down the field to CJ Uzomah. And it's just like,
yep,
of course I did.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, had a massive role in helping pull Jamar Chase along through this preseason and keep his confidence up as there was lots of things falling down around him. And what happens? Instantly connects on the 50-yard bomb, the explosive play we've all been talking about mm-hmm. all offseason. The Jamar Chase big play we've been talking about all season all comes to fruition, and he's at the centerpiece of all of it. And you're like, oh, yeah, Joe Burrow's back.
Yeah, I spent early yesterday talking about Jamar Chase and the defensive line and CJ Uzomah and the return of Joe Mixon and who played well on the offensive line and who didn't and Zach Taylor's decision-making, which we'll get to all of that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, and by the way, Joe Burrow, who has not played a full season, comes through in the biggest moment of his NFL career and did it with ease. And it set them up to win a game that they seemed destined to lose for a while. He played very well otherwise. He did so in the face of a lot of duress, getting sacked. We all wanted to see him get hit. God knows we got that on Sunday. And it just kind of to a degree felt like, oh, yeah, ho-hum, that's what Joe Burrow does. That's what he's going to do.
Yeah, and the other side of it was, you know, the two things was more explosiveness and the deep ball thing that he worked all offseason on, talking about trying to conquer that and get better at that. The other side was when you really broke down his numbers, and he did a million things right last year, he wasn't the most efficient. I mean, he was not as good as you probably want him to be as far as your real winning stats, your yards per attempt, your, you know, the when you get into the deeper analytics of adjusted net yards per attempt, things like that. He had his most efficient game as a pro on his fewest number of passes. I mean, he was exactly the type of quarterback that wins games. High efficiency and a run game that also had nice efficiency, all of it connected together. And you know, when you get that, you kind of tackle two of your biggest demons from your first year, and makes you think of what can be once you really start to get the rhythm going with all the new parts you have going offensively.
Yeah, that's kind of how I walked away from Sunday's game thinking was, all right, yep, I got Joe Burrow check. He's back. Okay, Ja'Marr Chase, kind of saw a little bit of everything from him. Oh, yeah, 150 from scrimmage from Joe Mixon. All right, that holds up. T. Higgins had a positive impact on that game. C.J. Uzomah, who you and I have talked about occasionally, about the chemistry that he had with Joe Burrow early last year, the biggest play of the game involved him. And you start to think about what Sunday may have told us about the potential for this offense. And if you're a fan of this team, I don't know how you don't salivate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is tantalizing to think about what this team might be offensively if everybody stays healthy. If it turns out that what we saw on Sunday is a sneak preview, by the time we're in the heart of the season, God knows what offensively this team is going to be able to do.
And what are the odds that defense coached by Mike Zimmer doesn't finish in the top 10 this year? Yeah. I mean, that every Mike Zimmer defense finishes in the top 10, except for last year when everybody on the team got hurt. I mean, that's just what he does. Mm-hmm. And we talked all week leading up to about how Mike Zimmer has befuddled every quarterback. We've all seen it if you've watched this team for a while when he was a coordinator here, and he knows how to do it. And you just put up a pretty impressive 27 against them, mm-hmm. Where you had the game in control with 21 points there, maybe through the third quarter, and you just kind of then you started trying to run it out. I mean, that is a lot. I mean, you're going to face a whole lot weaker defenses than that one as you go, and you already looked pretty explosive in your first game getting everybody back together. You know, I think when you put all of those pieces together, you can see the light, that's for sure.
I was happy for Ja'Marr Chase. I was happy for the Bengals. I was happy for fans that we all got a chance to watch this dude do what he can do. I was happy for him. And you and I didn't talk on this show about what unfolded late last week. A lot of this was his doing. He had a poor offseason. He had a hard time catching the football. That's going to bring with it some concerns. I think we would agree that in the short term, those concerns were fair. But then the whole thing with the white stripes on the ball, and it's smaller, and what I thought was a very honest admission of, yeah, here's what I'm adjusting to. It's taking some time. I'm working on it. I'm going to be fine. But yeah, you want a reason why I'm struggling? This is maybe one of them. It wasn't excuse making. I took it as a guy giving you an honest answer. You, after Pro Football Talk, took a morsel of what he said and ran with it. You provided full context. I think you tweeted out the verbatim quote. So this guy just takes this torrent of crap, and everybody's at the game on Sunday, not necessarily waiting for him to fail, but you know the first time a ball goes through his hands and hits the ground, there's 60,000 people there that are just going to let him have it. Maybe me, chief among them. And yet he had a flawless day, and he made one of the biggest plays of the game, and he showed you a little bit of everything he can do. It's hard enough to be a rookie making your first start. It's got to be more difficult to make it with all the conversations that have been, you know, taking place surrounding that first start, to not just play well, but be a main reason why they won. I was just thrilled for him.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of pressure on that guy. And to come out and not just be good, but really be where you were like, really, at the end of the game, feel like you're relying on him.
Yeah.
Because Higgins was kind of in and out with had the cramp stuff going on or whatever it was, and Boyd wasn't super involved at that point. And you're just like, man, I guess they really need Ja'Marr Chase here, you know, and he made a couple of big plays for you, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a big deal for him, and it just the possibilities of this year just feel so much different when you have a game like that, when you instantly – it's everything they talked about keeping safeties thinking about that, keeping corners pushing back so he can chop off those routes short, and you can just keep moving the sticks that way because they're thinking about that play. Every corner against him has watched that, going against him will have watched that highlight.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be in the back of their heads all year, and it's the perfect thing to do. To have that planted in the back of every cornerback's head when you go up against them is exactly what you want, exactly what this offense wants, exactly what Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase want. And, you know, it was for him, and then when you end up getting the win on top of it all, ideal start and opens up a whole lot of possibilities for
this year. If I would have said Thursday afternoon, Ja'Marr Chase's first NFL game, 5 catches, 101 yards, and a touchdown, I would have been laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think I would have been able to say that. You always want to temper expectations for any rookie, you know, especially one where there are some other guys to throw to, and then, you know, you add to it all the drops. Nobody. I think we were hoping he would catch 2 or 3 passes, have like 25 yards, and basically not screw up, not give people a reason to boo him. And I think we all would have walked away from it going, all right, decent debut, let's go from there. Instead, 5 for 101 and a 50-yard touchdown strike? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I probably can be accused. I can be accused of a lot of things. But one of them would be overdoing some bits, and one of them is this. When trying to win back a fan base, you've got to give them a moment.
Yeah.
You have to give them something. You have to give them something that makes them want to go back so they can feel that feeling again, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the drug addict. And they gave them a moment. Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow gave Paul Brown Stadium a moment,
mm-hmm.
and gave every. And I think all the junk that happened in the month leading up to it made that moment all that more exhilarating for those that were there. And you can speak more to that than I can from the feeling that was actually in the seats. But like, that is important. So important for a team in a front office that is so aggressively pursuing reconnecting with their fan base. And for it to be Burrow to Chase, who they have leaned so hard on in all their promotion, mm-hmm. for it to look like that, an exact replica of the national championship game deep ball touchdown,
yeah.
It's like that's what wins you fans. That's what sells tickets. Not rulers of jungle and you know, Ring of Honor, all that stuff's fine. Mm-hmm. That
yes.
play, mm-hmm. that sells tickets.
And within the context of when it came, too, because we are conditioned to expect the final 2 minutes of any half to be disastrous.
The Morrison minutes, we dub them now. Because he has been in charge of tracking the failure that's happened.
I mean, literally, I'm at the game and I'm like, all right, this just sort of feels like handoff, run the clock out, let's go beat everybody to the beer line. And they completed the first pass to T. Higgins, and it's like, all right, there might be something here. There might be something. Maybe this is going to be different. Plus, they got the guy who can make 60-yard field goals. So, you know, let's get within Evan McPherson range. So we're expanding the possibilities. And then they get to midfield and heave it deep. If you've rooted for this franchise for any amount of time, not only do you not expect that, you expect that whatever they do is ultimately going to blow up. It's going to look stupid. It's going to cost them points. It's going to cause them to be losing the game at the half. I mean, there's 1,000 possibilities that you consider. None of them are good. And instead, you got the absolute best case.
Yeah. And I loved Burrow's explanation of that play, too, talking about how he had in his head the idea that, you know, we've been kind of dinking and dunking our way, and you figured once we hit midfield, they would then want to push up on those routes, assuming that we're just trying to get into field goal range, and I could catch the corner sitting on that route and then watch Ja'Marr run by him, and knowing that Breland would be probably the most aggressive of all of those. I mean, the mind games, the head games going on there of knowing this is when you can take the perfect shot and this is how you can catch him. And then to hit it to perfection is what makes him such a dangerous weapon. What's what makes him so fun is, in the same way they'll throw at the end of the game, fearless, man.
Yeah.
Just fearless and looking for every opportunity to have some big play or big moment like that.
All right. Well, speaking of fearless, we have to talk about 4th and 1 from the 30.
Sure.
We'll do that when we come back. He's Paul Danner Jr., covers the Bengals, along with Jay Morrison for TheAthletic.com. Hear that podcast growling drops a couple of times a week. When's the one with me on it coming out?
It's on.
It's on?
Yeah, the one from this morning.
The one from this morning? That came out, is up?
It dropped at about noon, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, nice. I can listen to myself, and then you guys talk about something meaningful on my way home. Looking forward to that.
And we didn't do anything mean, like, talk trash about you when you were done or anything like that.
I'm sure you did. You just didn't put it on the podcast.
Well, yeah, it was after we hit stop.
Thank you. 20 minutes after 3 o'clock, he's here till 4. Paul Daner Jr. on Twitter, at Paul Daner Jr. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. After 3, this is ESPN 1530. Mo Egger, Paul Daner Jr. is here for the hour with me. Bengals win on Sunday over the Minnesota Vikings. They take on the Bears this coming Sunday. You'll hear it live on ESPN 1530. All right, 4th and 1 from the 30-yard line, early third quarter, teams up 14 points. They decide to go for it. Before the play is even being called, before the play unfolds the way it did, when you don't see Kevin Huber jogging out onto the field, what are you thinking?
Well, they're going to try to draw him off sides here, is my main thought. And then my jaw just kind of drops once they actually snap. And then you know exactly what comes next after he gets stopped short. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, there it is.
There it is. Doors
there
open.
There it is. Yep. That's the play.
Come
it's
on
always
in.
Something. When you're in complete control and all of a sudden it changes. I have a couple of thoughts on this. And one being, okay, well, let's do this. Let's play the analytics side of this because that's what's in one ear. And that is it actually is a win probability of a 1% higher. It's an analytical toss-up. If you're looking at win probability percentages going for it or versus punting. So that's fine. Here's the problem with that is that Zach Taylor even talked about afterwards that this was an old school type of game. Me and Zimmer will get you in those. You were in an old school type of game. Your defensive line was winning. It was just two teams beating each other up. And you made a very new school decision in an old school game, which is weird. Normally, it's the you want it to be the opposite to feel like you're ahead. But I mean, when you have such control, and and you're beating them up on the line, and they haven't really proven they can go the distance of the field against you, that's where the analytics don't play, and that's where it doesn't make as much sense. I don't mind aggression. I really don't. I don't mind being that, saying I'm going to be one of the most aggressive head coaches in the entire football league, and that starts on fourth down conversions. You know, this isn't when everyone was stunned when Bill Belichick went for it against Indianapolis in 2009. This is different. This is kind of the way of the league, and I want to be on the forefront of that. I don't mind that.
Not at all.
But there's got to be a better gut feel for what is happening in this game. And that you're in an old school game that you are controlling. Just try to keep letting that ride. Don't rock the boat while you're doing that. Just keep letting your defense win, and that's not what happened. And that's where I have a little bit of a problem with it.
Yeah, there are moments where that play would make sense. I mean, even in that stage in the game,
playing the Chiefs,
we got to score touchdowns to win. We have to maintain possession to win.
Right.
We're not going to be able to hold them to 7 points. All that
Ravens,
right?
Browns, any of these teams, yeah,
but. I didn't like it in real time. I don't like it now, but you use the word aggression. And the spirit with which the decision was made, I love.
Yeah.
And I want Zach Taylor to embrace that. When Zach Taylor coached his first game here in the regular season at Seattle 2 years ago, we raved about aggressiveness, right? Aggressiveness at the end of the half. This is different. I want as much of that as possible. I'm willing to accept that there will be occasions, and I hope they're few and far between, but there are going to be occasions where decisions made with that aggressive spirit in mind end up backfiring and in real time don't make a lot of sense. I'm willing to pay that small price. I don't want it to occur in a situation that could completely change the course of a game. And let's face it, that's kind of what happened. Change the course of that game on Sunday.
I'd also like it to be consistent.
You're right. And we saw a conservative 3rd and 4 late in the game.
The third, I even take some issue with 4th and 3, but more so on the call on 3rd and 4. Now, granted, you know, Zach kind of addressed it a little bit more yesterday. I'd asked him about it after the game, but I think there was just a lot to process of what I was ticking through a bunch of stuff. And he kind of spoke on it specifically and was like, you know, we had an RPO built into that was set up of, if the throw is there, take the throw. But we really wanted to run it to force them to use that last time out or run the clock down and let our defense force them to go however far they needed to go. I think we 4th and an eyelash, you're throwing it 20, you're putting the ball in Joe Burrow's hand. How about when the game essentially is over, if you convert this 3rd and 4, you're putting the ball in Joe Burrow's hand?
Yes, right.
And I had a problem with that. you know, that, to me, that was the – I take bigger issue to that than I even do the fourth and one from your 30 almost, because the game's basically over. You're say, hey, Joe Burrow, for 4 yards, go end the game. Go end it. And give one of your favorite plays that you have for him out there and go end it. Now, I get the risk reward side of it, but that's the risk. That's the risk. I mean, but you're letting the game be decided by number 9 and not by what the Vikings can do coming out with their offense. And I like that more. But you know, that said, you know, they eventually ended up winning. But you know, how different and how angry the narrative would be this week, more so.
Sure.
If they don't get lucky and pull that Dalvin Cook fumble out.
Admittedly, they won the game, and that shapes the conversation. Do you think the Dalvin Cook fumble was a fumble?
I do.
Yeah.
I think that's the way it was called on the field, you know? And it was as close as you can get on
replay.
There's
no way that's going to be reversed.
Yeah, I never say that, though, in this league.
Yeah,
I've seen so many reverses that I don't understand or whatever. But, yes, I mean, it's too close. You got to kind of go with the call on the field. And, you know, I had somebody from inside the Bengals organization sometime in the lead up to the first game be like, look, I like a lot of things here, but you know, I've liked things in the past, and we haven't gotten a call here. We've just gotten injuries here. We've gotten, you know, the bad luck, bad bounce, whatever. It just seems like we've just had so many things kind of go against us. Just kind of feel like at some point we've got to start to get some of those. And that's just really is more of a difference than people realize in the league. Kind of felt like had one of those games on Sunday where the things just kind of went their way a little bit, whether it was the review not getting overturned or whether it was the interception that bounced off Mackenzie Alexander or whatever you want to say. You know, it felt like one of those where it's like, well, maybe things will start to go their way. And that can have residual effects when it snowballs.
In 1997, the Bengals won their first game against the Arizona Cardinals in large part because of a late Larry Centers fumble. And I was walking out of a Riverfront Stadium that day, and my dad says to me something to the effect of, that's the kind of thing that has to happen if you're going to have a special season. And I'm like, yeah, awesome. You're right, Dad. This is exactly what has to happen. The Bengals then lost their next 7 games.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen with this bunch, but yes, they then lost their next 7 games.
Do not overreact to openers. I mean, how many times... I mean, I go back to, you know, one of my most regrettable moments ever speaking into this microphone with you, which was after the game in Seattle of Zach Taylor's debut. I said, you know, the horrendous is off the table. Like, the idea of them being a total disaster seemed off the table after that week because they had played very competitively despite losing. And, you know, it turned out to be very much on the table.
Let me tell you the dumbest thing. The dumbest thing that has ever come out of any human being's mouth. I'm serious about this. Uh-oh. I was thinking about this this week because it was the 20th anniversary of 9/11. The game before September 11th, the Bengals played at home against the New England Patriots and Drew Bledsoe. And they made him look old. They made him look decrepit. And at that point, the New England Patriots had spent most of my life being completely irrelevant. And the Bengals win that game. First game of 2001. And the world changed forever a couple of days later. But I remember walking out of Paul Brown Stadium that day, giddy on excitement and 23 years old and likely very, very intoxicated. And I said, with my dad, and I said, I'll tell you what, at the very least, we're not New England Patriots fans. That year they won the Super Bowl. The world was introduced to Tom Brady 2 weeks later. He took over for Bledsoe against the Jets. And they went to 9 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
So, it's really my fault. Yeah. I don't really believe in jinxes, but I have never forgotten that. As I'm watching, you know, we're watching Patriots fans, and I'm like, God, you know, for as anonymous as the Bengals are, who likes the Patriots?
Yeah.
9 Super Bowls later.
Yeah.
I ate my words.
Yeah, they've got a lot of fans. You see it every year, though. Just be careful on overreacting. I would go back to... a memory that Bengals fans don't like, and that is 2009, Stokely.
Oh.
Right. But heartbreaking way to lose, right?
Yeah.
That team ended up being great, and they won so many games at the end, the same way they basically won that game at the end, if not for the miracle. And that's going the other direction, you know? I mean, there's just... You can't get a real feel for the season necessarily after one game, as even even in a one that's a win or a lot of things that you like, there's still a long way to go for sure.
Yeah, go to Green Bay, win week two, where Antoine Odom just kicks the crap out of some left tackle, and then the Brian Leonard, Andre Caldwell game week three against Pittsburgh.
Week three against Pittsburgh.
Was it? Yeah, week three against Pittsburgh. Yeah, very, very similar.
We shall see.
I could also tell you what my reaction was to the Brandon Stokely. I think I've told you this before. It was the first game I went to after my dad passed, and the Bengals sucked for 59 minutes. They finally scored. They go up 7-6 or whatever. And my wife at the time says something to the effect of, you know, that was your dad that made that happen. We have this real poignant moment. And then the Brandon Stokely tip, and the guy's running down the field, and I look at her, and I go, where the bleep was he on that one? And she just walked away.
Yeah. So
that was maybe a sign of things to come. Yeah. 24 minutes away from 4 o'clock, he's Paul Danner Jr. We do have to talk about an area of the team that was fantastic that you wrote about, and I'm glad you did, because their performance kind of got lost in the shuffle on Sunday to a degree, and that's the play of the defensive line. And I guess we have to talk about Jesse Bates some more, because he talked this week, talked yesterday. And so
he did.
You talked about him on your podcast. Got to talk about Jesse Bates.
I've got to talk about Jesse Bates.
It's 24 from 4. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Dates in service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Reds back out tonight in Pittsburgh against the Pirates. Wade Miley against another lefty, Dylan Peters for Pittsburgh. Cincinnati comes into play tonight with a half-game lead over the Padres and the Cardinals in the hunt for the NL's final wildcard spot. Padres hook up again with the Giants and Anthony DeSclafani tonight. Cardinals and Mets again. Phillies opening up a series against the Chicago Cubs. By the way, the Luke Fickell radio show will be tonight at 8:05 on ESPN 1530. You'll hear from UC's head coach coming up at 4:20. Cincinnati getting set to play Indiana on Saturday afternoon. You wrote extensively about the play and the payoff of the investment in the defensive line. And it kind of gets lost in the shuffle, which is why I'm glad you wrote about it. Because that unit, it wasn't just one guy. It wasn't just the two guys who got the most snaps. Pretty much everybody, especially on the inside, who played a significant number of snaps, contributed in some way. That unit was fantastic.
Yeah, and it wasn't, I think what you said is right. I mean, it wasn't that it was, oh, DJ Reader looked great,
right,
or Larry Ogunjobi looked great, or wow, BJ Hill just got here, and Josh Tupo is really getting apt. All of them and together really fed into this thing that just wrecked the game.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely wrecked the game. Here's a few things of that for that I kind of have in the story. Last year, I mean, nobody that followed this team doesn't needs to be told this again, but they got nothing from their defensive tackle position as far as pass rush. They had all of last year from anybody with a defensive tackle tag attached to their name, they got 3 sacks and 34 total pressures in the course of the whole season. On Sunday, they got 3 sacks and 7 pressures from anybody with a defensive tackle attached to their name. Already equals in sacks. And that's really underselling their impact, because they also drew 5 holding penalties on pass rushes that dramatically changed the course of the game. And a 6th that got called back, also a 4th sack that got called back. Larry Ogunjobi had one that got called back by Eli Apple defensive holding. And last year they had 15 drawn holding calls, 5 in week 1 this week. I mean, you're talking about equaling almost all of last year's totals, getting within range of that immediately. It is the exact opposite end of the spectrum, you know, when you think about where they came from. And the problem with last year's defense is it is the ultimate weakness to strength story. And they invested in Ogunjobi. They got Reader back, who they previously invested in. You know, they traded away Billy Price, the depth that he provides for BJ Hill. You know, all these things, and that's not even counting the draft day investment that they're not really even seeing. Trey Hendrickson, obviously, extension for Hubbard. All of this was in the idea of changing the game up front, and so that when they do face teams, particularly those with questionable offensive lines, of which there are many across the league, by the way, including the team they're playing this week, they can wreck it. And they can change the way things go. And they did that. And if you look at this, Jacksonville's going to be the same way in a few weeks. Pittsburgh, it's at least the weakness on their team as they got new guys. It has a chance to be the dominant storyline of why this team gets real momentum at the early part of this season. And you can see that now after watching them play on Sunday. I mean, that was real. That was some old school, like Mike Zimmer defense type stuff.
It's just interesting that the year after they say goodbye to Geno Atkins, the defensive line showed that it has the potential to be special. And the year after they say goodbye to A.J. Green, the wide receiver group looks like it has the potential to be special.
I mean,
those are two icons in the history of the franchise.
Absolutely. And everyone, Father Time, chalks off two more. I mean, it's why you want your team to be constructed the way this one is, is you want your best players to be 26 and not in your 30s. And the difference, I mean, if you just look at the difference of what you're getting, we talked a lot about, particularly during the draft with the Joseph Osai pick, and then some of the extent when they extended Hubbard about the tone that they about this relentlessness they want this defense to have. These are not a bunch of stars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not. They're a bunch of guys who are kind of hungry to make names for themselves, and they kind of play that way, and it creates that relentlessness. And that looked like a team that had that trait on Sunday.
Yep.
The trait that they've been begging to have, the one that they didn't feel like they had before, that they were changing the roster over to try to get. That energy and a play like on snap 83 on a 90 degree day, you got a guy at the last second ripping a ball out is culture change. When we talk about that's culture change. It ain't speeches in the locker room and sayings on the wall. It's that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you talk about changing the roster and people believing in the culture, that's what it looks like. The way the defensive line played and plays like Jermaine Pratt's, I think that's a really encouraging storyline if you're looking for those coming out of Sunday.
Paul writes about the defensive line that is available today, theathletic.com. Let's spend a few minutes on Jesse Bates when we come back on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
You're listening to Paul Daner Jr. and Mo Egger in studio talking all things Bengals and general NFL topics on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
All right, we got a couple minutes away from 8 o'clock on ESPN 1530. Amid the win yesterday, the afterglow of yesterday's win, we had Jesse Bates talking with you guys for the first time in weeks. You know, he did the thing with Hort and Lapham in mid-August on the Bengals official channel, but there hadn't been a press availability in a very long time. And what did you make of what he had to say?
He's not super thrilled. I mean, he wanted to get it done. I think he expected to be able to get it done. And it seemed that he should be the obvious next in line after Sam Hubbard got done. And it didn't. And he said he's going to go play pissed off, quote unquote, this year. And, it's just...
I hate this.
I hate it.
I hate this.
It's just not... It shouldn't be like this.
No.
It shouldn't be like this with something that's this easy. And should be this easy and over whatever. And I feel like I've talked it to death. So, I'll go down the road again, but it's like, you can't claim you had to pay top of the market value for free agents like Trey Hendrickson and Trey Waynes and DJ Reader and Hilton and Ogunjo that you had to do it. Right. And people say, oh, you overpaid. Okay. I'm okay. Fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You had to do
had
it.
To.
Right.
Yes.
And then lowball and haggle with this guy. Those two can't coexist. If you're draft developer, Tane, and this is who you are, and this is who you want to be organizationally, and you want to be about culture inside and showing everybody you do the right thing, this is how you do everything right, and nobody can deny that Jesse Bates has done everything right, including not pull at Jamal Adams and sit out during training camp.
Mm-hmm.
While this was all going on, you treat him like this, everyone sees that. There are real-life locker room reverberations of that. The same way there are real life locker room reverberations of rewarding the right guys. And so they've got to live with that and having to go play pissed off and feeling insulted by your own team from one of your stars and your captains.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. He'll be here. He'll get the franchise tag coming up. It's not like he's going to be gone off the field. I don't think it has effects on the field. I think it does have effects off it.
Yeah, I feel bad for Zach to a degree because while this is not his, he's not sitting across from Jesse Bates' agent. The last 2 years, there were just so many things he had to answer questions about that had nothing to do with what he's here to do, which is try to win football games. And it felt like this was going to be a year where a lot of that could be sort of scraped off his plate, right? From A.J. Green 2 years ago to the Jonah Williams injury to the Dalton to Finley dynamic. I mean, just
Mixon contract was a thing.
Mixon contract, COVID, all the different things that have hovered over this Cordy Glenn, you know, I mean, that whole fiasco. So much. Carlos Dunlap last year. Just a mound of crap stuff. And it felt like this stood to be a year where all of that went away. And now the coach could just go try to win football games and be judged on whether he can or can't. And now it's just, maybe it's just one thing, but it's one thing that if I'm Zach, I'm like, why do I have to answer this question? To me, I'm going upstairs and going, just get it done for my sake. Give me a shot here, man. Get my best player locked and loaded for the foreseeable future.
Make the layup.
Yeah.
Make the layup.
Yeah.
It's all it is. It's make the layup. It's a great pass. You're all set up. You did it. You did all the work, and you blow the layup. And it does, in a lot of ways, cut the legs out from underneath Zach because, you know, you're talking about a guy who's killed us all with culture talk and seems to have that going.
Yeah.
Seems to have a lot of people buying it, and then to have this show up, it does chop your legs out from underneath you a little bit in people kind of riding that positive momentum of treating guys right and feeling like this is a great place to be and that everyone takes care of everybody. And I know nobody wants to set, you know, value in contracts. It's okay to overpay sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The same way we said it was okay to overpay sometimes in free agency, it's really okay to overpay in a situation like this. And the fact that you're still talking about it, it's a fail. I don't think it's as big of a deal, you know, probably as some people want it to be. And we probably make a bigger deal of it than it should be because it's stuff that people talk about. But it's just it's a missed layup.
We will we'll talk next week.
Yes, next.
Although I'm not here next Tuesday, I'm in it for Lance, so we'll have to figure something out.
I'm sure we'll figure something out.
We will. Reed Paul, theathletic.com. Hear that podcast. Growlin' is the Bengals podcast he does with Jay Morrison. New episode dropped at noon today, so make sure you check that out. Meanwhile, we have Luke Fickell. You'll hear from the Bearcats head coach. He was asked about rumors of him going to USC. We're already doing this because Mike Bone let Clay Helton go. So you'll hear the UC coach talk about the USC job at 420. And then we'll spend some time on that. And I have a couple of different thoughts on that. And maybe you agree. We'll find out. But first, we have 18 games to find out whether the Reds got 2019 through 2021 right. We'll spend time on that next.
The Bengals battle the Bears. Coverage begins Sunday morning at 9 on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Damn straight. Here we go, 5 after 4. This is ESPN 1530. Good afternoon. My name is Mo Egger. I appreciate you listening. Hopefully you're enjoying your Tuesday. In 15 minutes, Luke Fickell, his team getting set to play Indiana. You'll hear Luke talk about the USC game. She came open yesterday. I have thoughts on that. I'll share them with you in 20 minutes. Did Luke talk at all about Indiana? Did he talk about the game on Saturday? Did any of the people at the press conference ask Luke Fickell questions about the game his team has on Saturday, which is a really big game? I know the Hoosiers were smoked week one by Iowa. This is still a road game in the Big Ten against a team that was ranked to begin the season that I faded and took the under on, but still, nonetheless. Or were all the questions about Luke Fickell going to USC, which, even if it does happen, and that is an enormous if, even if it were to happen, still ain't happening for like more than 3 months. So that coming up in just about 20 minutes. At Mo Egger, by the way, is how you can hit me up on Twitter. Reds play tonight, first of three against the Pirates, first of nine between now and game 162 against Pittsburgh. Somebody has to be the last National League wildcard team. Why not the Reds? They were done a favor last night by the San Francisco Giants, who beat the free-falling San Diego Padres. The St. Louis Cardinals won last night, knocking off the New York Mets in a game started by two 40-year-old starting pitchers, Rich Hill and Adam Wainwright. Adam Wainwright was really, really good. So things have tightened, and the Reds still are clinging to the last wild card spot. They lead San Diego by a half game. They lead the Cardinals by a half game. Philadelphia is 2.5 back. New York is 3.5 games behind Cincinnati. I think if you're glass half empty, you look at the last couple of weeks and go, Reds have blown an enormous opportunity to take advantage of the Padres free falling and also the chance to play the Cardinals a bunch head to head. If you're a glass half full thinker, and frankly, I am for the most part, you look at it and go, God, the Reds have lost six straight series. They've blown a bunch of opportunities against bad teams. And yet, they still lead the National League wildcard race, or at least the race for the last National League wildcard. Despite all this stuff that has happened, despite all the losing, despite the absolute offensive dip that this team has experienced, they go into the final, I guess, ninth of the season? In the driver's seat in the race for the last wildcard spot with an easier schedule than the two teams that are directly behind them. That's not a bad place to be in. At the same time, if you've watched them play over the last couple of weeks, it's hard to be that exciting. What we have here, for me at least, is very much, I think, kind of an 18-game referendum on this little mini era of Reds baseball. I believe the Reds have a chance next season to be pretty damn competitive. Their starting staff next year could very well include Luis Castillo, Hunter Green, Sonny Gray, Nick Lodolo, maybe Wade Miley, perhaps Tyler Mahle. What they do with Vladimir Gutierrez is going to be interesting. Like there's still Jonathan India and Tyler Stevenson, and Jesse Winker is going to be here in his prime. And maybe Nick Senzel comes up and at some point stays healthy and contributes. And Jose Barrero, there's a core to build around. But let's be honest here, man. Starting right around the trade deadline of 2019, this franchise pointed, I think, very specifically towards 2020 and 2021 as the window within which they were really going to go for it. They signed Nick Castellanos. They signed Mike Moustakas. They bring in Wade Miley. They go get Shogo Akiyama. And I think a lot of that was done with the intention of 2020, 2021, here we go, here's our window. 2020, some things happened beyond their control. Obviously, a COVID season. Who knows what the Reds would have done during a full year in 2020 had there been no pandemic. But, you know, look at some of the guys who are on this team right now and just how we're talking about them, right? Like, Nick Castellanos is probably going to opt out. And the smart money would be on him playing for a team that's not the Cincinnati Reds. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I am. Most are viewing his departure as an inevitability. You are stuck with Mike Moustakas, which, by the way, when Mike Moustakas signed his contract, we talked about how that contract, boy, those last 2 years, not going to be crazy about that. You got to win while you have him in his first 2 years. Unfortunately, Mike Moustakas has often been injured and nowhere near as productive as the Reds hoped he would be. They signed Wade Miley for 2 years. You could do whatever you want with Wade Miley, and I hope the Reds bring him back. But as much as people viewed him as an afterthought, the history of this franchise does not have that many starting pitchers brought in via free agency to $16 million contracts. They signed Shogo Akiyama. They held on to an aging Joey Votto. They made a run at winning here 2020 and 2021. It didn't happen in 2020. If it doesn't happen in 2021, there's two things about that. First of all, it sort of signifies that going for it with the guys that I just talked about didn't work. The idea wasn't make the playoffs as a 7 seed, not score a run, then come back the following year and finish on the outside looking in of what frankly is a very underwhelming bottom of the playoff field, right? Number two, though, it is going to amplify the impatience that people have with the Reds, and I think to a large degree, the distrust that a lot of people have with the Reds. It feels like there are a lot of folks, and maybe you feel this way, and maybe I'm dead wrong, but it feels like there are a lot of fans whose interest in the team or whose faith in the team is kind of hinging on how do they perform over the last 18 games, and does their performance over the last 18 games put them in a position to advance in the postseason? And if the answer is no, I think his franchise is going to have a really hard time not getting people to care about them, but I think to a degree getting people to believe that a reward for the decades of patience is in the offing. Wait a minute, you couldn't win with Nick Castellanos, and you couldn't win with Mike Moustakas and the better part of his contract, and you couldn't win while you had a resurgence season from Joey Votto and a Rookie of the Year season from Jonathan India. You couldn't win while you had Wade Miley. You couldn't win while you had Shogo Akiyama, even though they're stuck with him for one more year. What's to lead me to believe that you're going to win anytime soon, either when some of those guys are older or when you don't have some of those guys? This is an extraordinarily critical stretch. Reds ownership has been in the public's crosshairs for the past 8 months, more than at any point over the life of Bob Castellini's ownership of the club. I don't think folks are going to turn on him even more if this team is on the outside looking in once we get to the postseason. Nick Kroll's fingerprints are all over whatever successes you believe the Reds have had. And again, I don't think missing the postseason this year means they lose 95 games next season. You certainly could walk me down a path that involves a destination where the Reds are more than competitive next year, perhaps even in the postseason next year, because they should have some really good starting pitchers. They should have a lot of good things going for it. At the same time, we don't know what next season's going to look like. We don't know if there's going to be a season next year. Here's what we do know. This team was built to win in 2021. Nick Kroll was put in charge of the 2021 Reds. Nick Kroll had a say in building the 2020 Reds. The 2020 Reds didn't really amount to much of anything. If the 2021 Reds do fail to amount to much of anything, we're just going to go cool. Yeah, Nick Kroll's going to run the baseball ops. David Bell is a part of this equation as well. And David Bell was hired to win. He was. It was not like Brian Price where they hired him to sort of oversee what they knew was going to be a dismantling of the club. He was not hired to oversee a rebuild. He was not hired to sort of be a placeholder for the next guy. David Bell was hired to win. And while I believe that we overstate the role of a manager in a team's success or lack thereof, the reality is he was hired to win. We're going to be ending year three, and the Reds will not have won with David Bell. I wouldn't have a huge issue with David Bell managing the team next year, but good luck selling your public on the manager that you hired to win, not winning, and then coming back. It feels like there is so much riding on these next 18 games, and maybe even beyond, because I'll be honest with you, if the Reds get the last wild card and then lose the wild card game, That's not necessarily a smashing success, right? So I think what's happened over the last couple of weeks is, yes, they've gone into the tank offensively. And they've blown some games they should have won. They should have won that game on Saturday night. You have a 4-0 lead early in the game. Luis Castillo on the bump. You're supposed to win that game. You are supposed to. Pennant-winning teams in September win that game. You're supposed to win that damn game. But I think really what's happened here is because they have failed to take advantage of the Padres being terrible, they have failed to take advantage of a bunch of games head-to-head against the Cardinals, they have failed to take advantage of the field, and the field top to bottom is pretty uninspiring. It's not very deep. It's not very good. What they do is they've put themselves in a position where it's 18 games make or break really for this little mini era of Reds baseball. And they've put themselves at the mercy of 18 games that are going to determine how people feel about the direction of the club, the ownership of the club, the management of the club, the manager of the club, and many of the players on the club. And perhaps the organization itself. 2020 and 2021 were billed. They were billed as, okay, you waited through that long rebuild. You waited through 98 losses in 2015, and 94 losses in 2016, and 94 losses in 2017, and 95 losses in 2018, and 87 or whatever it was losses in 2019. You waited through all of that, and now here's the payoff. The payoff is supposed to be more than the 7 seed and 21 shutout innings last year and finishing lower than 5th and on the outside looking in this year. I believe the Reds are going to make the playoffs. I do. That is as much a statement about how I don't think the Padres are going to recover, and the Cardinals are going to play a tougher schedule than the Reds, and I'm not really buying the Phillies because of just the gap they're facing between themselves and Cincinnati, even though Philly's schedule is pretty easy. And I think the Mets are way too many games out. Cardinals still do have two more with New York. They play the Brewers 7 times. So the Milwaukee Brewers on the verge of obviously clinching. They do play the Cubs a bunch. I do think, though, it is fair to explore how we're all going to feel and what should be next if after October the 3rd, which is game 162, this season is over. Because, again, this was billed as the payoff. This was billed as you put up with that long rebuild, you put up with years of non-contention, you put up with 2.5 decades of not advancing in the postseason. Here's the payoff. The payoff can't be, yeah, we played some meaningful games in September but fell just short of getting the 5th seed in the National League. It can't be. At the end of the day, I don't think it will be. God help that franchise, and God help us as Reds fans if it is. Reds and Pirates tonight coming up at 6:35. Staff ace Wade Miley gets the ball for Cincinnati against lefty Dylan Peters. Reds have beaten the Pirates 9 out of 10 times. Pittsburgh has scored just 26 runs against the Reds this year. If what they've done against Pittsburgh so far this season continues, this team is going to be okay. But if they lose series against Pittsburgh, if they lose more than just one or two games against Pittsburgh, oh boy. It is 18 games to deliver a payoff that was essentially promised years ago. You cannot tell people at the end of the season that they have to wait some more and expect them to just nod along and go, okay. 19 after 4, we'll see. Luke Fickell talked today. And look, I think it's silly to worry about Luke Fickell going to USC. I do understand why the question had to be asked. It was asked. You'll hear how the Bearcats head coach answered it next. David Bell's pregame comments before the Reds and Pirates coming up at 5:30. The Luke Fickell radio show is tonight at 8 o'clock on ESPN 1530. Bearcats and Hoosiers in Bloomington on Saturday afternoon, a game that has been highly anticipated for a while. And so a lot happening with Bearcat football. They're in the top 10. They have not played a full 60-minute game so far this year. The first half against Murray State, I will never watch again because it was awful. Nonetheless, the expectations are unchanged. The excitement, I think, is still what it was. The excitement level, at least, is still what it was before the season began. But now things are occurring against a backdrop of look, it's a legitimate story. USC fired its head coach, Clay Helton. And the person who fired the coach and will be hiring the next one is Mike Bone, who was the athletic director here when Luke Fickell got the job. And so even beyond connecting the dots, even if Mike Bone had never worked at UC, had never hired Luke Fickell, why wouldn't Luke Fickell be a candidate for that job? He's done a great job at UC. I mean, wouldn't there be something wrong with the world if USC football came open and Luke Fickell's name wasn't mentioned? Wouldn't there really be something wrong if USC's job came open and the AD from UC is there and Luke Fickell's name wasn't being mentioned in that case either? Of course. So this is a thing that I think is fair to wonder. I'm not going to spend a lot of time worrying about it. I'm not going to spend a ton of time introducing this as a topic because I just don't really think it matters right now. It's September. What's today? The 14th? It's September the 14th. UC football has 10 more regular season games remaining, plus ideally a conference championship game, and then whatever happens after that. It's just not something that I'm going to spend a lot of time being consumed by. I do have a few thoughts, and because it is a thing today, I will share the thoughts. If it's something you want to talk about at any point, we don't really screen off topics. If you call in and want to talk about Luke Fickell going to USC one day, go ahead. But as a fan, it's just not something that I'm going to panic about. But I do understand you're going to hear Luke Fickell answer a question about USC, posed to him by Keith Jenkins of the Cincinnati Inquirer. And look, I get it, Keith, either because his editor asked him to or he understood there's a responsibility. The gig comes open. Everybody around the country is mentioning Luke Fickell as a candidate, as a possibility. Everybody understands the Fickell-Mike Bone connection. How legitimate all this is, none of us really know. But you're being very fair if you introduce that question at a media availability of Luke Fickell. So here is the exchange from earlier today.
Luke, there's a fellow in the room.
We can't even talk about Indiana yet, huh? I know nothing. No, we know nothing. I mean, look, I don't talk to anybody. I barely talk to my own family during the season. And, you know, so I wouldn't ever talk about it, nor would I have even answer a phone call or anything like that. So I know nothing, nor does it make me have any interest. So it's not a big deal. It's nothing but distractions if people allow it to be. And for us, it can't be, you know. But I also want to say that this is the greatest thing that can happen for us, and because it is a reflection on what these guys have done on the football field. So there are some great things about it. If that's what's being talked about, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with what Desmond Ridder and Maje Sanders and Ahmad Gardner and those guys have done to put our program in a light. And I hope that there's a lot of those calls and things like that at the end of the year. Because at the end of the year, when you're playing really good ball, those things are going to happen. And we pride ourselves on people calling at the end of the year, whether it's, you know, for me or for your coordinators or those juniors that, you know, they want to come out for the draft because they're playing really, really good football. So it's a compliment to all if somebody is bringing anything like that up because, you know, I think that's about all you really need to talk about. I mean, plenty of our young juniors that have a future in football are getting a lot of calls as well, and it can't distract them either.
You're used to hearing this stuff in November and December. Have you ever heard it in mid-September?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't normally listen until, you know, like I said, even January where you start to read some things, but it's a crazy world, a crazy business, and I think it does nothing more than show a lot of us that, you know, stability is great in this business, and when you can create some stability in the things that are around you, grass is not always greener. And if not anything, it does, you know, if you're going to spend any time thinking about it, it does make you realize what great fortunes you have to be building something and have some stability, you know, not just for you as a person and you as a family guy, but you as a program and the kids in your program.
All right, I don't know how you took what Luke said. I don't want to say it didn't matter to me, but it really doesn't for two reasons. Number one, you could say all those things and then ultimately still one day go take another job. Number two, this is just not something that as a UC fan is going to consume me. And there's three very basic reasons why. I'll get to all of them next. Sports Update is a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Reds and Pirates tonight, first of three in Pittsburgh. Cincinnati is clinging to that last wild card spot. They give the ball to Wade Miley tonight. Dylan Peters, lefty, is going to throw for the Buccos. Starting lineup tonight, India, Farmer, Castellanos, Votto, Suarez, Aquino, DeShields in center. Barnhart behind the dish, Wade Miley on the hill, 635 tonight, 700 WLW, Padres and Giants tonight, Cardinals and Mets, Phillies and Cubs, Luke Fickell radio show tonight. tonight at 8 p.m. on ESPN 1530. A couple of things on those, and I think I'm talking here to a somewhat small fraction of people who are UC fans, who consider themselves invested emotionally in UC football. I'm kind of a big believer in enjoying the moment and not necessarily just disregarding what might happen down the road as something that, you know, we'll just worry about it when it gets here. But UC football has a chance to have a really special season. I don't know that they're going to go undefeated. This game on Saturday is weird because of how poorly Indiana did play against Iowa, but it's not going to be easy. But this team, from a talent perspective, I think you would agree, has a chance to have a really special season. And UC football, we were talking before about the payoff for all the patience. The payoff for the Tommy Tuberville regime was this, what UC football is doing right now, competing for conference championships. They're a national talking point. Fans are excited. Nippert Stadium is full. Programs, the schools moving into the Big 12 on the shoulders of football. This is a great time if you're a UC football fan. Why let something that is not going to be settled for months ruin the experience for you? I legitimately felt bad for people, and to this day still feel bad for people who in 2009 obsessed over what might happen with Brian Kelly. And the Brian Kelly to Notre Dame thing was 1,000 times more likely than Luke Fickell to USC is. And I remember at the time going, look, I get it. Who knows what's going to happen? It's going to lead to some hurt feelings. The Bearcats are having a season that just a couple of years ago, nobody ever could have even fathomed. Let's enjoy this, because I know people who have said to me, I wish I would have spent more time really enjoying that last season in which the Bearcats beat everybody in the regular season. But instead, I was too worried about what was going to happen with Brian Kelly and Notre Dame. I'm going to do the same thing with Luke Fickell. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You're going to enjoy what's happening on the field and with the team so much more if you don't let the Luke Fickell to USC thing, if it even is a thing, and no one really knows if it is or will be, if that is consuming you, if you're allowing that to ruin your enjoyment of this season, I feel for you. But I'm also sort of fueled by this. A couple of years ago, I was watching Luke Fickell start to turn the program around. And I said at the time, I don't want this to come off as a knock on Luke Fickell, because he's done a marvelous job. And this is just 2 years ago. This is before UC was in the top 10 last year. It's before they're in the top 10 this season. They turned the program around. They were going to compete for a conference championship. We weren't yet talking about the Bearcats being in the Big 12. And I remember saying on this show that what he was doing served as a reminder that this is the job that he has. He's doing a good job, but the job that he has is also a really good one. This is a really, really good job. I said that 3 years ago. I'm not exactly breaking new ground. 3 years later, look what's happened. Look at the recruiting pipelines that Luke Fickell has helped open. Look at the ways in which the university community, the city as a whole, students, alums, are re-energized about Bearcat football. Yes, they've got to get an indoor practice facility built. But a lot of the things that previous coaches had to do, beg people to come to games, beg to get a bubble built, beg to get Nippert Stadium redone. Whoever the head coach is now doesn't have to do those things. The job could not be easier. And now you're being equipped with Big 12 membership. I don't want Luke Fickell to go anywhere. I don't want him to go to USC. I don't want him to go to the NFL or any other college. But if he were to, Do you know how attractive this job is? Now, is John Cunningham going to hire the right guy? I have no idea. No clue. I do not know. It's what he's paid to do. But I kind of view UC football, the job of head coach, through a lens that is wider than that, that only includes a picture of Luke Fickell. This is an exceptionally enticing and good job. You can win here. You can get paid here. You don't have to do a lot of the things that you used to have to do here. I've used this example 1,000 times of putting up my Christmas tree with my first wife one day, and we're at home back when we had a landline. The phone rings. UC's getting ready to play Rutgers, and it's a cold call recording of Mark D'Antonio begging people to come to Nippert Stadium. Following year, they hire Brian Kelly. I'm hanging out with a buddy of mine at a bar on the west side, and a dude from UC walks in with a card table and an easel and some pocket schedules. And about 3 minutes after him, Brian Kelly comes in, and he's like begging people to come watch his team play. You don't have to do that crap anymore at UC. You can if you want. You don't have to. So I just, there's a lot of this. They have a hell of a team this year. It's September. No one even knows. Like, Mike Bone hired Luke Fickell. Did Luke Fickell like working for Mike Bone? Is Mike Bone there for the long haul at USC? Is Luke Fickell a big enough name for those people at USC? Is Luke Fickell interested in the rebuilding job needed at USC, especially in the transfer portal era? I don't know the answer to those questions. You will drive yourself nuts if you consume this college football season spending endless amounts of time wrestling with the answer to those questions. Meanwhile, the team that's on the field this year is one to behold. I'm not telling you they're going to go undefeated. I'm not telling you they're going to win on Saturday, although I think they will. But you waited for a long time if you're a Bearcat fan to have a team like this. Enjoy it. And then as we get to the end of the year, things will play out. Who knows? I mean, it's not inconceivable that forces conspire to have Mike Bone name the successor to Clay Helton before the college football season is even over. Who knows? I don't know. Here's what I do know. A, Luke Fickell's got a really good team this year that has a season that is just now getting started. Really, to a degree, hasn't even begun yet. Number two, when that job comes open at UC, there's going to be a whole lot of people who want it. There's going to be a whole lot of people who want that gig. I mean, whatever the list of interested candidates was in 2016, triple it and add qualifications to them. It's about to be a Power 5 gig. You can win here. I don't frame jobs in terms of, well, it's Alabama. No, it's can you win? Can you succeed? Can you recruit? Can you get paid? What does the job entail? Is there a history of success? Inherited roster have a chance of being pretty good? It's a great gig. I would worry about this if I didn't think this was a great gig. I wouldn't worry about it as much as some. It's a great gig. Want Luke to keep it. But I just, all I can do is, and I'm not going to spend a world of time on this after today because I don't know what the point is. But, yeah, look, if Luke Fickell's name wasn't being mentioned in connection to USC, that would be ridiculous. Would be ridiculous. Wait a minute. Like, I would almost be offended by that. And I don't get offended by anything. Wait a minute, you mean to tell me they're not even going to call Luke Fickell when the old AD here is there? Really? They're not going to call Luke Fickell? Like, what'd you expect? Of course he's a candidate. He should be. He should be a candidate for every job that would come open in college football. Luke Fickell should be a candidate for NFL jobs. I'm serious about that. For NFL gigs. How would he not be? So this comes with winning. This comes with large-scale success. And then you add to it the intricacies of the Bone-Fickell relationship to whatever degree they have a relationship. By the way, man, I like Mike Bone. He was good to me, but I know some dudes who – I know some people who worked for that guy who didn't love it, didn't love the experience while he was here. Is Luke Fickell one of them? I don't know. Well, why wouldn't he be that dude should be a candidate for every job in college football. Every single job. Every single athletic director that has an opening should say, can we get the guy at Cincinnati? That is a byproduct of success. And if one of them were to get Luke to go to their gig, get Amy Fickell to play along, John Cunningham would be deluged by people interested in this gig. So, if I were to put an amount of money that matters to me on whether Luke Fickell will be at Cincinnati or USC in 2022, I'm putting that money on Cincinnati. But even if it turns out that I were to lose that bet, I'm not really going to worry about it now. Brennan and Jones on Baseball coming up next.
The Bengals battle the Bears. Coverage begins Sunday morning at 9 on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Hey, what's up? It's 4 after 5. Remember me? I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Taryn, we good? You all right? Still down in the dumps by the Vikings losing to the Bengals? You okay? You've gotten over it? You've recovered nicely? Very good. Been quiet today. David Bell's pregame comments before the Reds play the Pirates coming up in about 30 minutes, and an undeniable truth about UC football ahead as well. I will admit to you something here really quickly before we grab some phone calls. I talked extensively about Luke Fickell before the top of the hour, and, well, that has some folks triggered, I guess. The Zach Taylor 4th-and-1 from the 30, which we've just kind of beaten to death. If the same exact scenario presents itself this week, and granted, the Chicago Bears do not have the explosiveness potential that the Minnesota Vikings do, so it's a little bit different, but same exact scenario, 4th-and-1, 30-yard line, up 14, lots of time still to go, defense playing great, good punter, kick the football away, and I'm not going to crush you for that. I'm on board. I get it. That's fine. In real time, when Zach Taylor made that decision on Sunday, I detested it. I still don't love it. But I keep thinking about me. And one might argue that that's all that I do. I thought about me for years, both when Marvin Lewis was still here, and over the first 2 years of Zach Taylor, I have been begging for someone coaching the Cincinnati Bengals to at some point let them hang, if you know what I mean. Just let them hang and go for it. Do something with some stones. Do something that indicates you're not afraid. Forget coaching while worrying about what the post-game questions are going to be. I'll never forget, and I don't remember the exact circumstances, and had this jumped into my mind before the show, I would have looked it up. I think this was 2016 or 17. I remember the Bengals played on Monday Night Football against the Giants, and if I recall, it was one of these, like, sort of half-assed end of the first half Marvin Lewis drives where they kind of try to score but not really try to score, and I remember writing a blog, back when I used to write blogs, writing a blog about how I wish Marvin Lewis would just say, screw it, F it. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to let him hang. Here's what we're doing. And if you want to ask me about it after the game, ask me about it after the game. If it doesn't work, fine. I can live with it. F it, we're going for it. We're going to do something aggressive. And I don't remember the context of it, but I remember begging and pleading for Marvin to coach like that. Not worried so much. And I think there's a lot of coaches in a lot of sports that coach or manage making decisions because, what are the post-game questions going to be like? What are they going to ask me after the game? How am I going to explain this? I fully believe that for all of his attributes as a head coach, and he had many, that was a part of Marvin's MO, especially toward the end. I didn't love the decision that Zach Taylor made. But I love the spirit that it was made with. I'm not going to worry about the questions I'm going to get after the game. I'm not going to worry about the questions I get tomorrow. If this doesn't work, by the way, we aired his press conference yesterday. And he was asked some good, pointed, fair questions about the decision to go for it on fourth and one, up 14 from his own 30 in the third quarter. Fair questions. This is a day after the Bengals won the football game. Those questions have to be asked. Zach Taylor didn't coach thinking about those questions. Can you imagine the volume with which those questions are asked, not just in terms of how loud they're asked, but how often and in the number of different ways they would have been asked? Zach Taylor managed and coached that game on Sunday like somebody who did not care about that. Here's my decision. Let's go for it. I didn't like the play call. Play call didn't work. Maybe it works if Joe Mixon doesn't slip. I would have put the ball in Joe Burrow's hands. I probably still would have punted it away. But I can at least appreciate, and I think if you've watched this franchise in recent years, if you're like me, and God knows I hope you're not for the most part, but if you're like me and you've just wanted the Bengals to be coached by somebody who just goes, you know what, screw it. I'm trying to win the damn game. Here's what I think is best. We're going for it. I trust this part of my team. We're not going to be passive. We're going. And if I'm asked questions about it, I'm asked questions about it. And if it doesn't work, you know what? Then it doesn't work. Dude, I'm 6-25-1. I got to win football games this year. I'm going to go and do that. It's not that I like the decision, but I can appreciate it from that standpoint. I thought it was a little foolish. I thought it was a little too cute. Thought you could argue across the line from aggressiveness to dumb. But if that's how Zach Taylor is going to be coaching this season and coaching this team in particular, sign me up for that. Because if this team is good enough, and a lot of what we saw on Sunday was good enough, then the aggressiveness is going to pay off because he's got a team that's good enough to reward his aggressiveness. Sometimes it's going to backfire. Sunday it backfired. By the way, the decision to arm Joe Burrow with the ability to call a play where he throws a pass downfield to his tight end with the game hanging in the balance late in overtime within the game's final minute, that was aggressive. Had that not worked, fine, whatever. Dude, you're trying to win the football game. Not settling for a tie. You're trying to win the football game. If Zach Taylor coaches the way he did in that moment, and by the way, there were moments of conservative play calling, conservative decision making. The third and four, the fourth and three, late in the game, Joe Mixon then kicking it away after they didn't pick up the first down. The entire offensive game plan in the first quarter felt like a preseason game. That felt like Joe Burrow's preseason game. But if the spirit with which that fourth and one decision was made reveals itself often this season, sign me up for that. Sign me the hell up for that almost every single time. And if that means occasionally I got to put up with he makes a decision that just sort of hurts, it's a little bit too aggressive, I'll be honest with you, I can live with that, man. I can live with it. Doesn't mean I'm always going to agree, but I can handle that. And if the team is good enough, the team is going to be good enough to win in spite of those decisions. For years, I've wanted a coach who's like, screw it. I don't care what you ask me after the game. I don't care what the fallout is going to be. I don't care what people write. I don't care what they're saying in the broadcast booth. Here's what I think is best for our team. Yes, it's a little outside the box. Yes, it's a little daring. Yes, it incurs some risk. You know what? Screw it. Let's do it. Doug Peterson, who's not in the NFL anymore for reasons I'm not sure I understand, when he coached the Philadelphia Eagles to a Super Bowl win over the New England Patriots, what did everybody say about Doug Peterson after that game? Oh, boy, that dude don't coach scared. Remember Luke Fickell winning at the Rose Bowl 2018? What do we all say about Luke Fickell? Hey, man, that dude don't coach scared. Sign me up for Doug Peterson. Sign me the hell up for Luke Fickell. Sign me the hell up for Zach Taylor if he ain't going to coach scared. And if he's not coaching scared, yeah, there are going to be some times where you go, okay, that's where I would have reined it in. Sunday was one of them. But the spirit with which that decision was made, in 1,000% in. Sign me up for that. 12 after 5 at Mo Egger and on the phone at 513-749-1530. Let's see here. Thanks for those who have waited patiently. Tony and Dry Ridge, you're on ESPN 1530. How are you?
Yeah, Mo. I didn't like the decision, but you're right. He did go for it. They still won the game. And it's almost like when Tommy Tuberville made that dreadful call against East Carolina. You remember that? We had ran an option play all year, and we run it in the fourth down. And we end up having to win the game on a 50-some-yard field goal, you know. But it reminded me of that kind of deal. But, hey, you know, at the end of the day, we won that night. We won that game Sunday. So that's all I got to say about that as far as Stump would say. But my question to you is, you know, or I guess it's my comment on Luke Fickell. I was a lot more worried about Michigan State than about this USC job, because he had a former coach and a former mentor, and he had other former mentors that would, you know, would like to have seen him there, and that's always a job we were told fear because of, you know, Ohio State maybe bringing him back, maybe wasn't as high a probability, or a Notre Dame opening up or whatever. And the USC job, I'm not going to lose one second of sleep about it. I'll you know, worry about when I'm in Bloomington on Saturday. And I just want to beat the Hoosiers.
Yeah, you and me both. To a degree, the Michigan State thing felt a lot more real. And again, like, number one, Luke Fickell should be a candidate. An athletic director that wouldn't look at the guy at Cincinnati and at least say, God, I want to learn more about him, isn't doing their job, isn't paying attention, especially when it's somebody that Luke Fickell worked for. That doesn't mean he's going to go. I don't know. What I can tell you is this. I believe Luke Fickell is the real deal when he talks about wanting to stay. I believe he's the real deal when he talks about not wanting to hopscotch around the country with his family. I believe that there's a pull to having his kid a part of the UC Bearcat program right now that matters to him. I also believe the job that he has is really good. I believe that they can win championships in the Big 12 once they get there in a couple of years. I believe they can be very good next year. I believe the recruiting pipelines to this program are very, very open. I believe there's something about
better.
I believe there's something about the USC program that is not exactly desirable. They haven't been nationally relevant since Pete Carroll left. There's going to be a rebuilding job there. Who knows what effect the transfer portal is going to have? Who knows what positive effect the transfer portal can have? Who knows if Luke Fickell loved working for Mike Bone? Who knows how long Mike Bone's going to be the athletic director? We'll get the answer to those questions. We're not going to get them in September. So until we do, go beat Indiana, beat Notre Dame, and put yourself in a position to potentially at UC play for a national championship.
Well, Mo, I'll close with this. Luke Fickell reminds me of Moses. He was trying to lead UC to the promised land, which was P5. And he's got them to the edge of the sea, and he's got the sea to open up, and Pharaoh's army is closing down. And Luke sees the promised land, and all of a sudden his cell phone goes off, and it's a Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said, hey, have I got a job for you, which would be Mike Bone. And Luke said, you know what? I worked to get us to that promised land. You know, I got them this far. I think we're going to cross over and just see how far I can take this bunch. And I really think that kind of theory is what Luke's thinking, because he kind of said that today. I mean, hell, Moe's even built his own barn, you know, and yeah, I guess you've read about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the things he's – yeah, I think he's really wanting to see just what he can do there. You know, at this place right now. Now, if Ohio State Notre Dame opens up, yeah, well, hell, they'll build him a lot more. They'd build him a bourbon farm if he wanted it. But anyway, you know, we'll go from there. But, yeah, this one just don't – yeah, other than Kentucky fans telling me, oh, yeah, he's gone. Tell Mo they thought he was gone when the Kent State job opened up.
Look, I've heard for years now about how he's going to be gone. He's going to be gone to Louisville. That didn't happen. He's going to be gone to Auburn. No, that didn't happen.
West Virginia.
He's going to be gone to West Virginia. That didn't happen. I've heard time and again how he's going to be gone, and he hasn't been gone yet. So, look, when he goes, he will have coached at least 5 years at UC, and he will have made the program exponentially better than anybody than it was when he took over. And I think to a large degree, as much as I'm a huge Brian Kelly fan, he will walk away from that program as the best coach the University of Cincinnati has ever had, because he's the guy who got the most done. Tony, thank you as always.
See you, man. Beat the Hoosiers.
You got it. I mean, look. 5 years ago, That program was an absolute disaster under Tommy Tuberville. UC is moving to the Big 12. It's moving to the Big 12 for a lot of reasons. At the very top of that list is because the school was carried on the shoulders of a football program, which is the biggest asset that maybe that entire school has. To a degree, Luke Fickell can never coach another game at UC, and the job he's done has already been legendary, as far as I'm concerned. So that's all I say about all these coaches. Leave it in a better place than you took it over. Job done. Now go beat IU. 18 after 5. David Bell in just about 15 minutes. 513-749-1530. Do you have pennant fever? Do you have wild card fever? Next. Producer Taren Bland still down in the dumps because his Vikings choked against the Bengals, has pulled a Joe Burrow. He's made a last-second call at the line of scrimmage. He's audible, if you will. And not only in 10 minutes will we hear David Bell's pregame comments, we'll hear Joey Votto's pregame comments as well. So you have that to look forward to as we get set for Reds and Pirates. I'm telling you, you can, if you go outside, and it's still really hot out, it's still like summer, kind of. I mean, it's getting darker earlier, but it's warm outside. You go out and you walk around downtown. Maybe you feel this in your office. Boy, you can just feel this town is just gripped with wild card fever. It is palpable. You can cut it. You can sense it everywhere you go. There is this sort of uneasy anxiety mixed with excitement that has just permeated all through town as the Reds make a push to the postseason. Can you feel it everywhere you go? You go out to dinner, you go to the grocery store, you go to workplaces, you go to the Bengals game or a UC game or the FC Cincinnati game, which by the way, they won a game in the stadium on the West End. So that's everywhere you go. Folks are just consumed, gripped by wild card fever. I don't know about you, but in my travels through this town, everywhere I go, it's just, I don't know how work is getting done. Wild card fever. I hope the Reds get to the postseason. If they do, I'll root like hell for them. I'm rooting like hell for them to get to the postseason. I don't believe in the idea that, well, just... they're going to lose the one-game wild card, so who cares? I mean, that's no fun. That's not a fun way to look at things. And I do believe this team is going to get the wild card. And then, you know, it's a one-game playoff. Anything can happen. Roll the dice. Let's go, right? But the level of excitement that you would expect for a playoff push does seem to be significantly reduced from what I think a lot of people thought it was going to be. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and I don't have time to get into all of them, but it doesn't exactly feel, and we're, you know, there's still 3 weeks left. It's not like they're going into a season-ending three-game series and it's do or die. I mean, there's still some time. But does it to you feel like we are in the throes of a playoff race? And maybe it will when they come home and a huge 10-game homestand. Dodgers are going to be here this weekend. They play the Pirates. They play the Nationals. I mean, it could change if the Reds play well this series, come home, and they play some huge games at Great American Ballpark. I will tell you, though, as somebody who is a major opponent of expanding the postseason field, I mean, look at where we are right now. The New York Mets are a game under 500, and they are 3.5 games out of a playoff spot. The Philadelphia Phillies are a game over 500. They are 2.5 games out of a playoff spot. These are not great teams. That doesn't mean that these teams can't get to the postseason, get hot, win a couple of series, maybe even get to the World Series, but these aren't great teams. Can you imagine how watered down this thing would be if we had 7 teams per league in the postseason, which was talked about before last year? More importantly, can you imagine the lengths to which owners will not try to build 95-win teams if winning 83 games becomes a very easy pathway into the postseason? By the way, if you want something that pretty much guarantees that big market teams are going to be in the playoffs every single year, expand the field even further. Reds and Pirates tonight, 635, 700 WLW. Wade Miley and Dylan Peters will be your pitchers. Reds looking for their first series win in their last seven. Remarkable how many consecutive series they've lost, and yet still effectively in the driver's seat for that last playoff spot. Bob is calling from Florence. Bob came to our show yesterday. Bob is on this show today. How are you, Bob?
Hey, Mo, good. How you doing?
I'm wonderful.
Hey, you know what, man? I would not worry about Fickell leaving. And I'll tell you why. I think, just based on some inside knowledge, he has really thought very seriously over the last couple months about maybe dawning a political career.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't heard this.
Well, I think the only thing we have to worry about is if Luke Fickell moves to Alabama and then runs as a Democratic opponent to Senator Tuberville.
Boy, I tell you what, but here's the thing. Senator Tuberville, it's a six-year term. So, you know, he's not going to be up for election for like another 5 years.
Well, technically that's true, Mo, but we all know that Tommy can do things that may speed that up. There's a recall election in California today.
That's right, with Governor Newsom, correct?
Yeah, yes.
Or the other thing about Tommy is it is sort of part of his MO that he doesn't see things to their completion, so perhaps he hits the eject button and they have to have a special election, and then Luke Fickell decides to follow in his footsteps in the great state of Alabama.
You're carrying that further than even I did, Mo, but that's... Hey, well, honestly, really, I would not worry about Tommy going anywhere aside from the fact that Ryan Day somehow has a catastrophe up there and they get to a point where they are thinking about replacing him.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one that I think we'd be very concerned about. And really, it's almost the Brian Kelly to Notre Dame thing, I think that for him would be almost I got to go. But other than that, and there may be, you know, there's great jobs out there everywhere, but I'm not so worried about the USC thing.
No, I mean, look, I get it. You connect the dots. It's Bone. It's Fickell. There's still some questions. Does his family want to go out there? Does he want to go out there? Does he want to be in charge of a rebuild? Does he want to hang out with O.J. Simpson? Which is a big question, because the answer for that to me would be absolutely not. Is Mike Bone there for the long term? I mean, there are a lot of things. Well, the folks at USC, do they have their sights set on a Bob Stoops or a Chris Peterson or another big name college? I don't know. And again, these are things worth asking, and the answers will come. They're not going to come in September. I simply cannot allow myself as a Bearcat fan to take away from a season and a team that I think has a chance to be pretty damn special.
Hey, we don't have to worry about him going to USC. My only concern would be if Chip Kelly gets fired. We've already lost one good coach to UCLA.
Wow.
You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, there'll be Cincinnati West.
Yes, I'm kind of a conspiracy theorist, Mo. My job really is to delve into things that I think the average fan doesn't really put two and two together.
Well, that's why I appreciate you. That's why I'm glad you're here, because there's a lot of us who don't do such things, and you do, and I find it illuminating.
Sometimes I don't have enough time for the day, throughout the day, Mo, to do everything. But, hey, one more thing. Tracy Jones, why is he not on the radio somewhere nowadays?
I don't know.
He's hilarious.
I don't know. I don't know.
Do you appreciate his humor, Mo?
I do. Yeah, I do.
I mean, the dude, I thought he did a great job on WLW, but the guy needs to be on a show somewhere, and I would love to hear him talk sports.
Hey, Taryn, get Tracy Jones on with us one day. We're allowed to do that now, right? I mean, you know, because for years Tracy was on the same time that I was, and so I had never heard a show. I heard it was really good, but now – you know, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know why I'm on the air, Bob, so I really can't answer questions as to why others aren't, if you catch my drift.
No, you should be on there, Mo. You do a great job. And you know what, though? Tracy, during the baseball season, I think for somebody would be fabulous.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll do it. I don't know. We'll have to ask Trey. That would be interesting. Bob, thank you.
Okay, Mo.
You know, back in the day, I used to produce, when I was a young boy, Taryn, 20 years old, I would produce Extra Innings with Tracy. As somebody who remembered Tracy as a player, had his baseball card, and we would get off the air, and Tracy and I would go over to Longhorse in Mount Adams, where the radio station was, and he would buy me illegal beers. David Bell and Joey Votto, their respective pregame comments are coming up next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. John Rothstein guy, the college basketball dude who's always tweeting about his Italian food and how Mick Cronin's like a few good men on Sunday. But he's always tweeting about palpable buzz. That's what you have in this town here with this wild card push. You can really feel it. Folks are walking around just sort of in a haze, aimless, sort of just distracted haze with this wild card push that is just... It's enveloped the entire region. This sports update is a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Reds and Pirates start a three-game series tonight at beautiful PNC Park. PNC Bank now owes me money. 6:35 tonight on 700 WLW. Starting lineup for Cincinnati against a left-hander by the name of Dylan Peters. I just dropped my phone, and I think I just rolled over it. Jonathan India will be leading off. Farmers hitting second. Castellanos in right. Votto at first. Suarez at third. Aquino in left. DeShields in center. Barnhart behind the plate. Wade Miley is on the hill, batting ninth. Jesse Winker has been sent on a rehab assignment to AAA Louisville. That is great news because, while I hate to make any team's offensive swoon, if you will, about one guy, there's been a distinct drop-off in what this team has done offensively since the moment Jesse Winker's intercostal started hurting. Taryn, I'm not even sure I still know where an intercostal is, but it sounds painful when it hurts. Here's some, you want some David Bell pregame comments? Not exactly a ringing endorsement from the guy in the other room. He just sort of like, you want some? No. here's David Bell talking with the assembled baseball media just a little while ago.
David, as tough a stretch as you guys have had here of late, is it with a clear finish line in sight, is it energizing knowing that you guys, as we speak, control your own destiny?
Sure. Yeah, it's you're right. It's all I can think of is being grateful to be in the position we're in. We have our challenges, our work cut out for us, but this is what you dream of. This is what you want to be in this position, and you would take this every time. The idea is to win a championship, and there's steps along the way that you have to get, and we're in position to do that. And we never expect or ask for it to be easy. Of course, just like every other team, there's been challenges throughout. Last 10 days have presented its own challenges, but it's made us stronger. So we are grateful to be in this position and can't wait to play.
No hesitation to put Farmer right back in the lineup?
No, although I wanted to make sure when I spoke with him to make, he reassured me that he had been moving, getting a lot of movement in at home. My only concern at this point in the year, it's definitely not a baseball concern. It's more of just used to doing physical activity, playing major league games every single day, and then your body has a tendency to shut down. So he reassured me that he's been doing a lot at home just to stay physically active, and that will help him avoid any sort of injury. That was my only question to him. And
play catch with the baby?
Once he said that, I felt great about putting him right back in there.
You have a general sense on Jesse beginning a rehab assignment today? How long
his rehab assignment might be?
Yeah, we have a lot of great experts, doctors and trainers and baseball experts and all that. And I think we've all put our heads together. And but for me, the bottom line is, I think at this point, I think Wink knows best, and I think he's going to take it one day at a time. And with where we are in the season being very important, everyone knows that. But also his health and coming back ready is very important. So I'll speak with him after the game tonight and just see where he is. He's going to be very honest. And I thought speaking with him yesterday, he had a great outlook on it. He wasn't going to get ahead of himself. He was going to wait till after the game tonight to give feedback to all of us. So we'll all make a great decision together.
You could hear the nervous tension in David Bell's voice as he prepares for this game tonight against the Pittsburgh Pirates, the first of 9 against Pittsburgh over the last 18 games. Tonight's first pitch, 6:35 on 700 WLW. Joey Votto also talked. Tarum Bland decided, Mo, guess what? Enough of you. Let's hear from the Reds first baseman who, you know, it'd be kind of cool if Joey Votto started hitting again, right? Here's Joey, the team's Roberto Clemente Award nominee, which is well-deserved, talking with the assembled baseball media just a few minutes ago.
Joey, how much being nominated for the Clemente Award, obviously it has to do with you as a player, but it has more to do with Joey Votto as the person. What does it mean to you?
I haven't really thought about it. I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. So I'm sorry I don't have an answer.
What was that in the background?
Things that I'm being nominated for, I don't get excited about people knowing about. So I don't really have much to say or a reply for that question.
It'll be special wearing 21 tomorrow.
Tomorrow the 21st.
No, tomorrow's the 15th.
And tomorrow's, the answer is yes, especially here in Pittsburgh. You know, Roberto has such a fantastic legacy here. It's an honor to wear the number. You know, thank you to the Pirates, to Roberto Clemente's family and everyone connected to the number. Thank you for letting me wear it. It's genuinely an honor. But tomorrow. I didn't know it was coming up tomorrow. It's great. First time in my major league career wearing a non-19. Oh, no, wait.
42,
excuse me. And Jackie, of course. A great one, Roberto Clemente. That's a cool nickname.
Yeah. And congratulations to Joey. Every team has a Roberto Clemente Award nominee. For those who don't know, the Roberto Clemente Award is given annually to the player who, quote, best represents the game of baseball through extraordinary character, community involvement, philanthropy, and positive contributions both on and off the field. And frankly, this nomination for Joey seems to be a little bit overdue. But can we get to I know I could be accused of sometimes not having the most sophisticated sense of humor, but I don't know how you don't laugh at this. Is this, Taryn, play this audio for me. Is this what I think it is happening in the background? Is Joey Votto is trying to answer a question about being the Roberto Clemente Award nominee?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. So I'm sorry I don't have an answer.
That's literally a toilet flushing. Do you have the?
I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. So I'm sorry, I don't have an answer.
Is that one of the writers? Please tell me one of the writers was doing the Zoom interview while they were on the can, or like, you know, in a public restroom or something. You could hear Joey. Do you have the access? Do you have access to the video of this, Taryn, or was it just audio? It's so we can't see. Can you give me the toilet flush and then a few seconds? Because Joey does sort of address that there's something happening that he's not directly involved in, but clearly, like, wow, this is the greatest moment in the history of sports Zooms as far as I'm concerned, at least locally. Give it to me again, Taryn.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. So I'm sorry I don't have an answer. The things that I'm being nominated for, I don't get excited about people knowing about. So,
and the beauty of this isn't like Joey talking about like three hits he had the night before or the pitching matchup tonight. He's talking about this award, which is one of baseball's most prestigious. It celebrates the life and memory of Roberto Clemente, who died almost 50 years ago, who is an iconic baseball figure. Many argue that his number 21 should be given the Jackie Robinson treatment and retired all throughout baseball. A legendary figure in baseball, a legendary philanthropist, and this is a big deal. This isn't Joey winning, like, you know, the NL Player of the Week award. This is an award for good deeds, for character, for community involvement. This is not an award nomination that you want to be talking about as somebody else is finishing up in the stall next to you.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. So I'm sorry, I don't have an answer.
I mean, that's not like that. That's not like this. You know, the bathroom's down the hall.
He played it off so well. So
well, was it him or was it one of the writers?
I think it was one of the writers.
I mean, I would think one of the writers would be like, "All right, I got to not do the Zoom call with Joey Votto to talk about the Clemente Award in the bathroom."
Because on a Zoom, once you talk, it switches cameras.
The camera didn't switch. Where was Joey in relation to the toilet? That's what I want to know. I mean, there's lots of places you could do a Zoom press conference, right? I mean, there's an interview room at PNC Park. There's almost anywhere else in the clubhouse. You could do it in the dugout. They did it within earshot of a bathroom.
He's in the press room, so maybe they added a bathroom there.
There's a toilet in the press room? Was somebody using it with the door open? Did the writers, when they were tweeting about talking with Joey Votto, mention this? It is 12 minutes away from 6.
This shows you the respect the Pirates the Pirates have for the Reds. Put it right next to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, you want to use our spot? Cool. Yeah, there's a men's room right next to where he's going to be doing the Zoom interview to talk about being nominated for the Roberto Clemente Award. Who was the Pirates nominee? Did whoever that is have to do it right next to the can, too?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. So I'm sorry, I don't have an answer.
It's 11 away from 6 on ESPN 1530. There's two types of people in this world. There's somebody who's listening to Joey Votto talk about being a Clemente Award nominee, toilet flushes in the background, and they don't find it funny. And then there's everybody else. I don't want to be friends with somebody who doesn't find that somewhat humorous, at least somewhat, and frankly, very humorous. Taryn, how much time do we have? We have 3 minutes. We have a lot of people we have to talk to. We'll just speed through the calls to try to get to as many people as we can. Mike Mount Adams, you got about a minute. Go.
Hi, Mo. Good to hear from you.
It's good to hear from you, Mike.
Yeah, I haven't talked to you in a while. Hey, listen, I thought it was very interesting. And then I want to get to the Reds, of course. Interesting take you got on that 7. You don't seem to have a problem with all those NBA playoff teams, do you? But you don't want another, or am I wrong?
NBA teams, their owners go for it. They go for it. There's also not a randomness to the postseason that NBA teams have. Baseball has an issue with teams not trying to win. If we increase the number of playoff teams, guess what you're going to have more owners trying to do? Get to 82 wins and have their team sneak in. That's not good for fans. It's not good for the game.
You just changed my opinion. I respect that.
Wow.
Hey. Well, yeah. I mean,
and by the way, if the NBA shrunk the number of playoff teams, that wouldn't break my heart either.
Yeah, me either. Hey, Mo. Just before I get to these other two things, real quick. Thank you for all your picks, man. You've been a godsend to me, and I appreciate it.
Well,
okay. It's true. Hey, and I'm thinking, if Mick went, why not the pick?
Oh, see, you're getting cute on me here.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think to a degree here, Mike, and I'm short on time, and so I'm sure we'll talk tomorrow. Thank you for calling, as always.
Sure, Mike.
I don't love the Mick Fickle comparison. I think with Mick there was a clear disconnect between himself and the person he was working for, who happens to be Mike Bone. I think also for a lot of people, there was a sense of, it's been 13 years, maybe it's time for this to end. I don't think anybody feels that way about Luke Fickell. Phil, you can have the last word. Go ahead.
Mo, I blame C. Trent Rosecrans for that toilet flush, and I'm going to ride that until it's proven otherwise.
Okay, let's do it. I have no issue with that at all. I can't refute it, so let's run with it.
Very good. Number two, hallelujah, hallelujah, because you know what gives me Reds fever is continuing to run in 185 platoon out of third base when you have Kyle Farmer back and leaving a 24-inning scoreless streak and Triple A when you need bullpen help. Have a good one, brother.
All right, man. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Watch. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to win the wild card. They're going to play the Dodgers. They're going to beat Max Scherzer. They're going to knock off San Francisco in the National League Division Series. They're going to beat the Brewers and go to the World Series. And people are going to talk forever about how great that team in 2021 was. All right, we have to go. What's on the show tomorrow?
David Bell.
Huh?
Today's David Bell's birthday.
It's David Bell's birthday?
49.
Did they talk about his birthday on the thing?
PTI, they're talking about it right now.
On Pardon the Interruption, they're talking about David Bell's birthday, but we couldn't do it on the Zoom call with the reporters. What are we doing? We have to go. Back at it tomorrow at 3:05. Have a great night. Thank you for listening. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.